No light, no sound, no time, nor space. Utter void. Then somewhere the beginning of a pallor, and with it a faint throbbing buzz as of a ghostly violin cello palpitating on the same note endlessly. A couple of ghostly violins presently take advantage of this bass. And therewith the pallor reveals a man in the void, an incorporeal but visible man, seated absurdly enough on nothing. For a moment he raises his head as the music passes him by. Then with a heavy sigh he droops in utter dejection, and the violins, discouraged, retrace their melody in despair, and at last give it up. It is all very odd. One recognizes the Mozartian strain. And on this hint, and by the aid of certain sparkles of violet light in the pallor, the man's costume reveals itself as that of a Spanish nobleman of the 15th to the 16th century, Don Juan, of course, but where, why, how, where on earth, or elsewhere have we got to from the 20th century? Another pallor in the void, this time not violet, but a disagreeable smoky yellow, with it the whisper of a ghostly clarinet, turning this tune into infinite sadness, the yellowish pallor moves. There is an old woman wandering in the void, bent and toothless, draped as well as one can guess in the coarse brown frock of some religious order. She wanders and wanders in her slow, hopeless way, much as a wasp flies in its rapid, busy way, until she blunders against the thing she seeks, companionship.
Excuse me, but I am so lonely and this place is so awful.
A newcomer?
Yes, I suppose I died this morning. I confessed. I had extreme unction. I was in bed with my family about me and my eyes fixed on the cross. Then it grew dark, and when the light came back, it was this light by which I walked, seeing nothing. I have wandered for hours in horrible loneliness.
You have not yet lost the sense of time. One soon dies in eternity.
Where are we?
In hell.
Hell? I in hell? How dare you?
Why not, Signora?
You do not know to whom you are speaking. I am a lady and a faithful daughter of the church.
I do not doubt it.
But how then can I be in hell? Purgatory, perhaps. I have not been perfect. Who has? But hell? Oh, you're lying.
Hell, Signora, I assure you, hell at its best. That is, its most solitary. Though perhaps you would prefer company.
But I have sincerely repented. I have confessed.
How much?
More sins than I really committed. I loved confession.
That is perhaps as bad as confessing too little. At all events, Signora, whether by oversight or intention, you are certainly damned, like myself. And there is nothing for it now but to make the best of it.
Oh, and I might have been so much wickeder. All my good deeds wasted. It is unjust.
No, you were fully and clearly warned. For your bad deeds, vicarious atonement, mercy without justice. For your good deeds, justice without mercy. We have many good people here.
Were you a good man?
I was a murderer.
A murderer? Oh, how dare they send me to herd with murderers? I was not as bad as that. I was a good woman. There is some mistake. Where can I have it set right?
I do not know whether mistakes can be corrected here. Probably they will not admit a mistake, even if they have made one.
But whom can I ask?
I should ask the devil, Signora. He understands the ways of this place, which is more than I ever could.
The devil? I speak to the devil?
But in hell, Signora, the devil is the leader of the best society.
But I tell you, wretch, I know I'm not in hell.
How do you know?
Because I feel no pain.
Oh, then there is no mistake. You are intentionally damned.
Why do you say that?
Because, Signora, hell is a place for the wicked. The wicked are quite comfortable in it. It was made for them. You tell me you feel no pain. I conclude that you are one of those for whom hell exists.
Do you feel no pain?
I am not one of the wicked, Signora. Therefore, it bores me beyond description, beyond belief.
Not one of the wicked. You said you were a murderer.
Only, Jules. I ran my sword through an old man who was trying to run his through me.
Well, if you were a gentleman, that was not a murder.
Well, the old man called it murder. Because he was, he said, defending his daughter's honor. By this he meant that because I foolishly fell in love with her and told her so, she screamed, and he tried to assassinate me after calling me insulting names.
You are like all men. Libertines and murderers, all.
And yet, we meet here, dear lady.
Listen to me. My father was slain by just such a wretch as you in just such a duel for just such a cause. I screamed. It was my duty. My father drew on my assailant. His honor demanded it. He fell. That was the reward of honor. I am here in hell, you tell me. That is the reward of duty. Is there justice in heaven?
Oh, there is justice in hell. Heaven is far above such idle human personalities. You will be welcome in hell, Signora. Hell is the home of honor, duty, justice, and the rest of the seven deadly virtues. All the wickedness on earth is done in their name. Where else but in hell should they have the reward? Have I not told you that the truly damned are those who are happy in hell?
And are you happy here?
No. And that is the enigma in which I ponder in darkness. Why am I here? Are you repudiated all duty, trampled honor underfoot, and laughed at justice?
Oh, what do I care why you are here? Why am I here? I who sacrificed all my inclinations to womanly virtue and propriety.
Patience, lady. You will be perfectly happy and at home here. As the poet says, hell is a city much like Seville.
Happy here, where I'm nothing, where I'm nobody?
Not at all. You are a lady, and wherever ladies are is hell. Now, do not be surprised or terrified. You will find here everything that a lady can desire, including devils who will serve you from sheer love of servitude and magnify your importance for the sake of dignifying their service, the best of service.
My servants will be devils?
Have you ever had servants who are not devils?
Never. They were devils, perfect devils, all of them. But that is only a manner of speaking. I thought you meant that my servants here will be real devils.
No more real devils than you will be a real lady. Nothing is real here. That is the horror of damnation.
Oh, this is all madness. This is worse than fire in the worm.
For you, perhaps, there are consolations. For instance, how old were you when you changed from time into eternity?
Do not ask me how old I was, as if I were a thing of the past. I am 77.
You're right, Paige, Signora. But in hell, old age is not tolerated. It is too real. Here we worship love and beauty. Our souls being entirely damned, we cultivate our hearts. As a lady of 77, you would not have a single acquaintance in hell.
How can I help my age, man?
But you forget that you have left your age behind you in the realm of time. You are no more 77 than you are 7, or 17, or 27.
Nonsense.
No. Oh, see, the Signora. Was not this true even when you lived on earth? When you were 70, were you really older underneath your wrinkles and your gray hairs than when you were 30?
No. Younger. At 30, I was a fool. But of what use is it to feel younger and look older?
Ah, you see, Signora. The look was only an illusion. Your wrinkles lied, just as the plump, smooth skin of many a stupid girl of 17 with heavy spirits and decrepit ideas lies about her age. Now, here, we have no bodies. We see each other as bodies only because we learned to think about one another under that aspect when we were alive. But we can appear to one another at what age we choose. You have but to will. Any of your old looks back, and back they will come.
It cannot be true.
Try.
17.
Stop. Before you decide, I'd better tell you that these things are a matter of fashion. Occasionally, we have a rage for 17, but it does not last long. No, at the present, the fashionable age is 40, or say 37, but there are signs of a change. If you were at all good-looking at 27, I would suggest you trying that and setting a new fashion.
I do not believe a word you're saying. However, 27 be it.
What? Doña Ana.
What? You know me?
And you forget me.
I cannot see your face. Don Juan, monster! You who slew my father, even here you pursue me.
Oh, I protest. I do not pursue you. Allow me to withdraw.
You shall not leave me alone in this dreadful place.
Provided my staying be not interpreted as pursuit.
You may well wonder how I can endure your presence. My dear, dear father.
Would you like to see him?
My father here?
No, he is in heaven.
I knew it. My noble father. He is looking down on us now. What must he feel to see his daughter in this place and in conversation with his murderer?
Oh, by the way, if we should meet him...
How can we meet him? He is in heaven.
Oh, he condescends to look in on us here from time to time. Heaven bores him. So, let me warn you that if we should meet him, he will be mortally offended if you speak of me as his murderer. He maintains that he was a much better swordsman than I, and that if his foot had not slipped, he would have killed me. No doubt he's right. I was not a good fencer. I never dispute the point, so we are excellent friends.
It is no dishonor to a soldier to be proud of his skill in arms.
You would rather not meet him, probably?
Oh, how dare you say that?
Oh, that is the usual feeling here. You may remember that on Earth, though of course we never confessed it, the death of anyone we knew, even those we liked best, was always mingled with a certain satisfaction at being finally done with them.
Monster! Never, never.
I see you recognize the feeling. Yes, a funeral was always a festivity in black. Especially the funeral of a relative. At all events, family ties are rarely kept up here. Your father is quite accustomed to this. He will not expect any devotion from you.
Wretch, I wore mourning for him all my life.
Yes, it became you. But you know, a life of mourning is one thing, an eternity of it quite another. Besides, here, you are as dead as he. Can anything be more ridiculous than one dead person mourning for another? Do not be shocked, my dear Anna, and do not be alarmed. There is plenty of humbug in hell. Indeed, there is hardly anything else. But the humbug of death and age and change is dropped, because here, we are all dead. And all eternal, you will pick up our way soon.
And will all the men call me their dear Anna?
Oh, that was a slip of the tongue. I beg your pardon.
Juan, did you really love me when you behaved so disgracefully to me?
Oh, I beg you not to begin talking about love. Here they talk of nothing else but love. It's beauty, it's holiness, it's spirituality, it's devil knows what. Excuse me, but it does so bore me. They don't know what they're talking about. I do. They think they have achieved the perfection of love because they have no bodies. Sheer imaginative debauchery.
Has even death failed to refine your soul, Juan? Has the terrible judgment of which my father's statue was the minister taught you no reverence?
Oh, how is that very flattering statue, by the way? does it still come to supper with naughty people and cast them into the bottomless pit?
Oh, it's been a great expense to me. The boys in the monastery school would not let it alone. The mischievous ones broke it, and the studious ones wrote their names on it. 3 new noses in 2 years, and fingers without end. I had to leave it to its fate at last. And now I fear it is shockingly mutilated. My poor father.
Shh. Listen. 2 great chords rolling on syncopated waves of sound break forth. D minor and its dominant. A sound of dreadful joy to all musicians.
Aha! Mozart's statue music. It is your father. You had better disappear. Did I prepare him?
From the void comes a living statue of white marble, designed to represent a majestic old man. To his sculptor, he owes a perfectly trained figure.
Ah, here you are, my friend. Why don't you learn to sing the splendid music Mozart has written for you?
Unluckily, he has written it for a bass voice. Mine is a countertenor.
Well,
have you repented yet?
Oh, I have too much consideration for you to repent, Commander. If I did, you would have no excuse for coming from heaven to argue with me.
True, true. Remain obdurate, my boy. I wish that I had killed you as I should have done, but for an accident, then I should have been here. And you would have had a statue and a reputation for piety to live up to. Any news?
Yes. Your daughter is dead.
My daughter? Ah, yes, the one that you were taken with. Now, let me see, what was her name?
Anna.
Ah, to be sure, Anna. Yes, good-looking girl, if I remember right. Have you warned, what's his name? Her husband.
My friend Otavio? No, I have not seen him since Anna arrived.
What does this mean? Otavio here and your friend? And you, Father, have forgotten my name. You're indeed turned to stone.
My dear, I'm so much more admired in marble than I ever was in my own person that I've retained the shape the sculptor gave me. He was one of the first men of his day. Now, you must acknowledge that.
Father, vanity. Personal vanity from you.
Ah, you outlived that weakness, my daughter. You must be nearly 80 by this time. I was cut off by an accident in my 64th year, and I'm considerably your junior in consequence.
Well?
Besides, my child, in this place, what our libertine friend here would call the farce of parental wisdom is dropped. Regard me, I beg you, as a fellow creature and not as a father.
You speak as this villain speaks.
Juan is a sound thinker. Bad fencer, but a sound thinker.
I begin to understand. These are devils mocking me. I had better pray.
No, my child, do not pray. Oh. If you do, you'll throw away one of the main advantages of this place. Written over the gates here are the words, "Leave every hope behind, ye who enter." Now think what a relief that is. For what is hope? A form of moral responsibility. Here there is no hope. Consequently, no duty, no work, nothing to be gained by praying, nothing to be lost by doing what you like. Hell, in short, is a place where you have nothing to do but amuse yourself.
Oh,
no. Ah, you sigh, friend Juan. But if you dwelt in heaven as I do, you would realize your advantages.
You are in good spirits today, Commander. You are positively brilliant. What's the matter?
I have come to a momentous decision. But first, where is our friend the devil? I must consult him in this matter. And Anna would like to make his acquaintance, no doubt.
You're preparing some torment for me.
All that is superstition, Anna. Reassure yourself. Remember, the devil is not so black as he is painted.
Let us give him a call. At the wave of the statue's hand, the great chords roll out again, but this time Mozart's music gets grotesquely adulterated with Gounod's. A scarlet halo begins to glow, and into it the devil rises.
Have I the pleasure of again receiving a visit from the illustrious commander of Calatrava, Don Juan, your servant, and a strange lady, my respect, Senora.
Are you?
Lucifer, at your service.
Oh, I shall go mad.
Ah, Senora, now do not be anxious. You come to us from Earth, full of the prejudices and terrors of that priest-ridden place. You have heard me ill spoken of, and yet believe me, I have hosts of friends there.
Yes, you reign in their hearts.
You flatter me, Senora, but you are mistaken. It is true that the world cannot get on without me, but it never gives me credit for that. In its heart, it mistrusts and hates me. Its sympathies are all with misery, with poverty, with starvation of the body and of the heart. I call on it to sympathize with joy, with love, with happiness, with beauty.
Excuse me, I'm going. You know I cannot stand this.
Yes, I know that you're no friend of mine.
Now what harm is he doing you, Juan? It seems to me that he was talking excellent sense when you interrupted him.
Thank you, my friend, thank you. You have always understood me. He has always disparaged and avoided me.
I have treated you with perfect courtesy.
Courtesy? What is courtesy? I care nothing for mere courtesy. Give me warmth of heart, true sincerity, the bond of sympathy with love and joy.
You are making me ill.
There you hear, sir, by what irony of fate was this cold, selfish egotist sent to my kingdom and you taken to the icy mansions of the sky.
Oh, I can't complain. I was a hypocrite. Yes. Oh, it served me right to be sent to heaven.
Why, sir, do you not join us and leave a sphere for which your temperament is too sympathetic, your heart too warm, your capacity for enjoyment too generous?
I have this day resolved to do so. In future, excellent son of the morning, I'm yours. I have left heaven forever.
What an honor, what a triumph for our cause. Thank you, thank you. And now, my friend, I may call you so at last. Could you not persuade him to take the place that you have left vacant above?
I cannot conscientiously recommend anybody with whom I'm on friendly terms to deliberately make himself dull and uncomfortable.
Of course not, but are you sure that he would be dull and uncomfortable? Of course, you know best. You brought him here originally, and we had the highest hopes of him. His sentiments were in the best tastes of our best people. You remember how he sang, Viva il Femmine, Viva il Bambino.
Santino e Gloria, you man of dark.
Precisely, precisely. Well, he never sings for us now.
You complain of that? Hell is full of musical amateurs. Music is the brandy of the damned. May not one lost soul be permitted to abstain?
You dare blaspheme against the sublimest of the arts.
You talk like a hysterical woman fawning on a fiddler.
I am not angry. I merely pity you. You have no soul, and you are unconscious of all that you lose. Now, you, Senor Commander, are a born musician. How well you sing. Mozart would be delighted if he was still here, but he moped and went to heaven. It is curious how these clever men, whom you'd have supposed born to be popular here, have turned out social failures like Don Juan.
I'm really very sorry to be a social failure.
Not that we don't admire your intellect, you know. We do. If I look at the matter from your own point of view, you don't get on with us. The place doesn't suit you. The truth is, now, you have, I won't say no heart, for we know that beneath all your affected cynicism, you have a warm
heart. Don't, please, don't.
Well, you have no capacity for enjoyment. Will that satisfy you?
Well, it is a somewhat less insufferable form of tantrum than the other. But if you'll allow me, I'll take refuge, as usual, in solitude.
Why not take refuge in heaven? That's the proper place for you. Now, come, Signora, could you not persuade him for his own good to try a change of air?
But can he go to heaven if he wants to?
What's to prevent him?
Can anybody? Can I go to heaven if I want to?
Certainly, if your taste lies that way.
But why doesn't everybody go to heaven then?
I can tell you that, my dear. It's because heaven is the most angelically dull place in all creation. That's why.
His Excellency the Commander puts it with military bluntness. The strain of living in heaven is intolerable. There is a notion that I was turned out of it, but as a matter of fact, nothing could have induced me to stay there. I simply left it and organized this place.
I don't wonder at it. Nobody could stand an eternity of heaven.
Oh, it suits some people. Let us be just, Commander. It's a question of temperament. I don't admire the heavenly temperament. I don't understand it. I don't know that I particularly want to understand it. But it takes all sorts to make a universe. There's no accounting for tastes. There are people who like it. I think Don Juan would like it.
But pardon my frankness. Could you really go back there, if you desire to? Or are the grapes sour?
Back there? I often go back there. Have you never read the book of Job? Have you any canonical authority for assuming that there is any barrier between our circle and the other one?
But surely there is a great gulf fixed.
Ah, dear lady, a parable must not be taken literally. The gulf is the difference between the angelic and the diabolic temperament. Now, what more impassable gulf could you have? Think of what you have seen on Earth. There is no physical gulf between the philosopher's classroom and the bullring. But the bullfighters do not come to the classroom for all that. Have you ever been in the country where I have the largest following? England. There they have great racetracks and also concert rooms where they play the classical compositions of His Excellency's friend Mozart. Now, those who go to the racetracks can stay away from them and go to the classical concerts instead, if they like. There is no law against it, for Englishmen never will be slaves. They are free to do whatever the government and public opinion allow them to do, and the classical concert is admitted to be a higher, more cultivated, poetic, intellectual, ennobling place than the racetrack. But do the lovers of racing desert their sport and flock to the concert room? Not they. They would suffer there all the weariness the commander has suffered in heaven. And there is the great gulf of parable between the two places. A mere physical gulf they could bridge, or I could bridge it for them. The earth is full of devil's bridges. But the gulf of dislike is impassable and eternal. And that is the only gulf that separates my friends here from those who are invidiously called the blessed.
I shall go to heaven at once.
My child, one word of warning first. Let me complete my friend Lucifer's similitude of the classical concert. At every one of these concerts in England, you will find rows and rows of weary people who are there not because they like classical music, but because they feel they ought to like it. We have the same thing in heaven. A number of people sit there in glory not because they are happy, but because they feel they owe it to their position to be in heaven. They're nearly all English.
Yes, the southerners give it up and join me just as you have done. But the English really do not seem to know when they are thoroughly miserable. An Englishman thinks he is being moral when he is only uncomfortable.